We're back!
Yay!
I ought to say that there is a danger we could lose signal at any point. Because let me tell you what happened. I was sitting in the garden last week. It was lovely. Yeah. I was sitting, I had a lovely day, pottering around. And I thought, you know what I'll do? I'll just get rid of that old television aerial cable that's been hanging around. Because you don't need it anymore, you know.
Yeah, sure.
I'd already taken down the aerial. So I just sort of cleared out a bit of extra cable that wasn't needed. And it was only about an hour later that I realised I hadn't got any internet.
Uh-oh.
What I'd actually done is cut the telephone line.
Well, this confirms everything I've always thought about you.
I don't like getting calls, so it's fine. But, you know, anyway, no, I had to repair it. So, and should all be fine now, I'm sure. Well, what could possibly go wrong?
Exactly.
Welcome, everybody. We're back. It's episode 324 of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Page.
It is.
And there's Joe Davies.
Yes. Hello, everyone. It's great to be back. How lovely to speak with you all again.
Yeah. So thank you, everyone, for your patience over the last 4 weeks or so in terms of not having a weekly episode. We'll resume that load of old twaddle now. But anyway, this is an important thing. How are you?
I mean, I'm as you would expect after 3 weeks of not working. I am stress-free. Mm. I am free from anxiety. I am chilled. And,
excellent.
You know, just don't want to go back to work. But desperately need to.
Because you were saying before the podcast that, you know, you're very, very good at not working. This is one of your skills.
I do sense a real gift there.
Well, the trick there is surely just to turn it into a ministry and get support.
Yeah, exactly.
To not do it.
Yeah, exactly. People do that though, don't they? They do these sort of incredible holidays to Latin America, and you know they sponsor it, they guise it under raising funds for people. So maybe I should do more of that.
Yeah, the best one I ever saw was an advert in the back of Christianity magazine many, many years ago, which was asking for someone, could you please help support my go-kart ministry?
Yeah, that's great.
And I thought, you just like doing go-karts, really, don't you? And yeah, nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
But... anyway.
No, I tell you what, it was really fantastic. I mean, the greatest bit for me was... you know, just being able to talk about Brian with Patty. So Brian was my brother who died last year, for those that don't know, and this was our first time going there. I'm not a particularly well-travelled person. I mean, I've been to France a couple of times. I've never been anywhere else in Europe. Went to America, obviously, to do the Renovare course. That's about it, I think, really. But I've been to Mexico loads because my brother lived there for 44 years. So it's 40 years. I mean, you know, it's amazing to it's an incredible place. He lives on this island called Cozumel and lived there and just, you know, eked out a living for him and his wife. And it was just, that was wonderful. But of course, the other things that are great there are the tacos. The weather's not bad, has to be said.
Mm. It looked very good in the photos that you sent me.
But lovely Patty took us on a little excursion, which we'd never done before, over sort of Yucatan. We went to Merida. We went to see flamingos in a lagoon there. Wow. And we saw these incredible birds. That's the one I sent you the picture of, the turquoise-browed motmot, which is like a bird of paradise. And they sort of gather around cenotes out there, which are like these underground caverns with water in. We got to swim in those. So it's lots of new experiences. And as normal, Rachel and I are going, we shouldn't be here. We shouldn't be here.
Why? Well, because you didn't deserve it or something? Or what?
Yeah, something like that. You know, you just think, well, people like us don't get to come to places like this. You know, it's just not right.
It was interesting because you sent me, obviously, some photos. And, you appeared to be having an absolutely wonderful time. And I did share them, obviously, with Claire, whose response was, well, he's not getting any more sympathy from me.
Ah, the compassionate heart.
She's very kind that way. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm so glad you've had such a great time, and you really needed it. That's fantastic.
And it was great to have the space to think about the theme for the coming year, which we'll come back to later.
Yeah. So we should say what we planned for this episode, and it might surprise you to know that it is planned. It certainly surprised me. So we're going to pick up a little bit more on our themes and see how they're going, and just generally catch up with one another, I think, really. And by the way, talking of shouldn't be here.
Oh, yes.
Are you sure you should be here, as in terms of here, well, right now?
I should be. But the exciting news is, as I speak, my daughter-in-law is experiencing contractions. My grandson was due to be born last Sunday. No sign of him coming out until last night. So
fantastic.
Hopefully next week there may be a little bit of news to share.
Oh, well, do let us know, because obviously by the time this goes out, something may have arrived.
Yes, indeed. Let's hope so.
Via stalk, I believe.
I believe that's how it
usually
works.
Usually delivered, yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember.
No, I looked away, to be honest. Anyway, that's great.
Yeah, how are you, my friend?
Oh, I'm okay. Yeah, I am enjoying the sunshine and spring most of all. That's been an absolute joyous thing. Oh, now, talking of new life, as it were, I've got a little announcement to make, because I have got sort of a new book out.
Have you?
Yes. Now, it's not really a sort of Nick Page book as such.
Okay.
It's something I've done with Open Doors, who, as many listeners know, I've worked with some of my time.
And as many listeners know, frown a little bit upon lots of double entendres.
So here's the thing. The book is called Witness, and I've written it with a colleague called Eddie Lyle. You know,
oh,
Eddie,
lovely, Eddie. Years back. Yeah.
And so it's a book sort of about his travels, but also about my reflections on his stories and kinds of stuff like that. And it's based around the Beatitudes and how the persecuted church, the way they witness can help us to sort of help people understand a bit more about Jesus. So it's sort of a Nick Page book, but actually, as you say, with significantly less innuendo than normal. But it is free, and if you want,
you
can go check it out on the website, and there's a small group guide and a little video of me and Eddie discussing what we wrote.
Oh, great.
And I think a lot of the themes will resonate actually with people in mid-faith crisis anyway. So, yeah.
So how would people find out about that? And
Go to opendoorsuk.org /witness, or I'll put a link in the show notes from here.
Yeah. Fabulous. Well done. What else?
What else have I done? Here's the thing. Right. So go down yesterday morning.
Go down where?
No, go downstairs into my kitchen then yesterday morning. I'm thinking, as I'm going downstairs, I think, oh, there's a very strong smell of sort of something down here. And there's a bottle of vinegar has fallen from a shelf and smashed on a floor, right?
Just fallen?
Well, so for the last week or so, things have been dropping in the house. In the bathroom at night, you could occasionally hear something fall, and you think, well, what's happened there? And you go in later on and something... small tube of something has fallen to the floor or something.
You do know I'm trained in exorcisms, don't you? And for you, a small charge.
The other thing that's really weird about this is that two bars of soap have gone missing.
Ah.
Two small bars of soap completely gone missing. Now, I think we've got two choices here. Either we've got a poltergeist who really misses having a bath.
Clearly.
You know, that's really what they're about. Or, and I suspect this is more likely, given that we live next to a farm, we have a large rodent, possibly the cleanest rat in history now. Because along with this, we've heard various scufflings in various places. So, you know, there we are. But, I mean, we've had it before. You know, this is par for the course where you live. But I've never had one steal soap before or knock vinegar down. So it's the clumsiest creature out, I tell you. It's ridiculous.
Well, I assume it was Claire's soap because, you know, I've smelt you.
Yeah, and you'd think that would keep the rat away.
You would assume so.
You know, the rat would go, well, look, we're rats, but we've got standards here.
Yeah, exactly. You're your own pest deterrent.
So I shall spend some of this weekend clambering about and putting down deterrents of various kinds. But there we are. That's the joy of living out where we are.
In a pub.
in a pub, in a very old pub. I mean, it could be a poltergeist, you know. I know people have died in this place in the past.
Yeah,
I went to a history society the other day, and there was a talk on the canal that used to go nearby, right? And I'm just sitting there. And the guy is talking about a lady who, very unfortunately, about 1900, cycled into the canal and went under the ice.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a lot colder back then. And so she her brakes didn't work, clearly. So she ended up in the canal. And they took her to the nearby pub, which is ours.
Your house, yeah.
Yeah, where sadly she died in the bar.
Oh.
So, you know, maybe it's her. Maybe it's Mrs. Plummer still looking for a bar of soap. I don't know.
And did she order, before she died, a fish and chips and say, oh, don't forget the vinegar? I could do with a wash.
That would explain it. That would explain it. Yeah. Anyway, so interesting times. Listen, we should get on.
Yes.
So what we're going to talk about today is we're going to catch up a bit more on our themes and see how they're going, because we had a bit of correspondence about it. Yeah. And the first thing I want to say is that we did have people write in and say, "What are, you know, can you tell us a bit more about themes, how you put them together and what they are and what yours have been and other episodes that talk about it?" So I've put a page on our website together with links to all the other episodes and I think with links to where I got the idea of themes from, which from another podcast, and maybe some ideas on how to put it together and why we have themes rather than resolutions.
Great. So you can find that on our website.
That's on our website, and it'll be in the show notes to this podcast as well.
So fabulous.
That'll be there.
That's great.
So we should start by reminding ourselves, each other, and the 17 of what actually are our themes. Remind us what your theme was.
So my theme for this year is Fear Not.
Excellent.
Fear Not.
And very scriptural. Surprisingly scriptural.
Thank
you, actually.
Yes, for a woolly liberal like me. That's not bad, is it? Yeah.
Excellent.
And remind us what your theme is.
Mine is less is more. And there's a whole load of stuff in that I need to unpack around that. But I think we've had an email kind of about that, haven't we?
Great. Yes, we have. And we'll come on to that. But let me just point out that yours is not particularly scriptural. And that's a great disappointment, I think, for many of us among the 17. Thank you.
thank you. I take that rebuke.
Good.
I welcome it, in fact, in a spirit of discipleship.
Good, as you should.
Thank you, brother.
Is that your welcoming face?
Yeah, this is my welcoming gesture.
How lovely and unusual. Okay, it's such a good thing this thing isn't a video podcast.
Yeah, indeed, for so many reasons.
Anyway, Harriet wrote in. And Harriet said, dear Joe and Nick, thanks for the great podcast this week. It shows she wrote in a long time ago.
Yeah.
So I thought I'd share with you my theme for this year, which is temperance. Nothing to do with limiting alcohol intake, but because I feel the need to strive for the fruit of the spirit, that in modern translations is self-control, but in the King James Version is temperance. This word to me implies something deeper and broader than just self-control or self-discipline, more of a spiritual practice in moderation and boundaries. As someone who has a tendency to overdo things, whether it be excessive rumination, over-enthusiasm for things, occasionally overwork, alternating with unproductive sluggishness, this seems a way to be more measured, intentional and balanced in life. Incidentally, is the fruit of the Spirit something we can intentionally cultivate, or is it supposed to grow naturally out of cultivating our faith and following Jesus? That was a question. Nick's reflection about focus and needing to pare down all the stuff in our lives makes so much sense, and his comments that in recent times we probably achieve far less than people did in the past while rushing around feeling that we are achieving more. Reading a biography of Beatrix Potter recently, mycologist, conservationist, rare sheep breeder, as well as prolific writer and illustrator of classic children's books, I was interested to read that a popular book in mid-Victorian Britain was entitled Evenings at the Microscope. It says, Ode for a Life Where One Could Have an Evening at the Microscope. So, that was from Harriet.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
That's a lovely email. And a temperance, what a lovely word, I think. Great word.
Yes, I don't use it much, I don't think.
Well, it's so out of fashion, isn't it? Because it got associated with temperance movements.
Yes.
Basically sort of anti-alcohol.
Yeah.
but it's concept of a sort of moderation and self-discipline, I think, is fantastic. I think that's just a brilliant word and a brilliant theme. And Harriet, do let us know how that goes on.
Yeah.
There was a little question in there about the fruit of the spirit and worth just diverting to, which, you know, I think the question was around, is it something we can cultivate or is it just a natural sort of a consequence of following Jesus? I don't know what your thoughts on that. I mean, I think a bit of both, probably, or probably more for a fruit of following Jesus. But there are exercises we can do.
Absolutely. I mean, the key thing there is following Jesus. I think it's definitely possible to be a Christian without following Jesus, in which case I don't know that there's any guarantee that there's going to be any fruit. You just have an extra set of beliefs bolted onto your life. And actually nothing can change. I've certainly experienced that in my own life, I think. And then there is the following of Jesus, in which case you're probably going to participate in some of the spiritual disciplines of Jesus, in which case you are putting yourself in a position where transformation does become possible and or even likely, you could say. So I think with that qualifying of following Jesus, I do think it's more likely to grow naturally. But
yes,
that we say, we know we can be a Christian without following Jesus at all.
I think that's true. You know, this is a result of an intentional sort of cultivation of a Christ-like life. And that's why the metaphor of fruit works so well. But I mean, I suppose getting back to the intentionality about it and the what you do with your time and, you know, talking about evenings at the microscope. Mm. This is kind of what I'm thinking about with my theme, really. You know, I could have used temperance, I suppose, as a kind of idea, or simplicity or something like that.
Mm.
But less is more for me is not just about decluttering. You know, it's not just about getting rid of stuff in that sense. You know, I do have too much stuff, and that's kind of where it grew from. It's also about, I suppose, getting back to those kinds of things, simpler things, and really enjoying them. You know, I'm not sure it's going to be an evening around the microscope, but
it could be. Yeah.
Well, I do remember as a kid, I went to a friend's house and his father had a microscope, and it was amazing. We did spend hours looking at these things.
Yeah, I had a microscope as a kid. We'd go to the pond and you'd pick up things in the pond and you'd come and look at them under a microscope. Tiny insects.
You'd love that, actually, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I would.
I bet you can get...
Think of it. I want a microscope.
I bet you can get something that like attaches to your phone or something.
Anyway.
Look, it is... So it's not just about sort of less material possessions. Although I'm gathering stuff together at the moment in order to get rid of a lot of stuff. It's about enjoying simpler things, I think, as well. And I suppose reducing complexity in my life. Because it seems to me these days everything is always trying to add complexity to your life. And it's a constant battle to reduce that. So every time you upgrade an app or something, now the latest thing is every app now wants to put AI in,
right,
whether you want it or not.
And
the complexity comes to the fact, I don't want that particularly, I don't need it. I don't want to get into a debate about it now. I have, as you might expect, strong thoughts.
I'm shocked to hear that.
But, you know, what it means is the complexity comes because I have to turn the damn thing off, you know. And people are, you know, software developers are always adding features that you didn't ask for, you don't need, but they've got to keep coming at you. So life actually gets more complex. And the real annoying thing about it is that it's sold to you as though it'll make your life simpler, all this stuff. So get hold of this product and your life will be simpler. And sometimes it works, but quite often, no, it's just another thing to look after.
Yeah.
It's another demand on your time. It's another set of technology to understand. Same thing, frankly, is true of theology. You know, it always wants to add complexity to you.
Yeah.
It always wants to make life more complicated and more beliefs more complicated. I've written an article this week. We'll maybe come back to it because it's not out yet. But I've written an article this week on the Council of Nicaea, which, as I'm sure you remember,
Can't wait.
Took place in 325 AD. So happy happy 1700th anniversary.
Oh yes, lovely.
The anniversary would be somewhere around May 20th. I might send you a card.
Yeah, thank you. I still use their face cream, to be fair. Oh no, that's that's Nivea. Sorry.
Council of Nivea. Yeah. But because it came up with part of what we now call the Nicene Creed, which isn't really, but it what it did was add another layer of complexity, essentially, to belief. So part of what I'm trying to do is go back to fundamentals and say, what is the simpler stuff? How can I remove complexity?
That's brilliant. Yes, I like it.
And what I'm also trying to remind myself of, and I think this is really important with themes, actually, is that it won't solve everything for me. You know, there's a myth, I think, that I can buy into, which is, it's kind of a myth of minimalism. Mm. You know, the idea that we see in those lovely minimalist homes where everything's pure and clean.
Yes, yes,
and you think,
yeah.
Oh, their life must be really perfect because their home is perfect.
Yes. I still get suckered into that thought.
Yeah. There's a myth that control will bring us comfort, I think.
Yeah.
Because one of the things I'm still thinking about is that phrase that I put in a few episodes ago, the opposite of uncertainty is death.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And there's a blog post I wrote about it as well. I'll put a link in. Uncertainty is life-giving.
Yeah.
That's what life is all
well,
about.
Well, it is life.
It is life.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is life. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the idea that somehow if I can pare things down, get things more simpler, everything will be, you know, comfortable, and I won't worry so much. I think I need to kind of sit a bit lightly to that. And in thinking about that, I've kind of realised that actually that's the link in a way between our themes, is that I think I have to be careful because I think I see less as more as a way of maybe not worrying about stuff so much.
Mm.
And I hope it will result in that, but it's not a miracle cure.
No, no, you know? Sure. I also wonder, you know, that phrase, the opposite of uncertainty is death. I wonder how much the church really helps us with that because so much of what we're being taught isn't faith. It is certainty. Have this right doctrine. Have this right. Isn't that Nicene Creed,
yes,
really? Isn't that all about having the right belief? So it sort of does away with uncertainty because it's trying to clarify things clearly. But how much of the things of God can actually be, you know, finitely described,
absolutely,
and understood anyway. So
yeah, absolutely. And in the article, I talk about how the fact that he didn't actually clear things up that much, because ultimately you're dealing with a mystery,
yes,
and you need to embrace mystery. And the best, I think, the best you can hope with creeds is that we're all baffled in more or less the same way.
Yes. But wouldn't that be a better thing to put at the start of the creed?
It would, really. It's not so much we can be certain about a load of stuff, but we can all be more or less baffled in the same Christ-like direction. I think that's
the creed. That's it.
That's what we're hoping for, really.
That's
yeah, so
brilliant.
I think that it's linked in those ways. You're absolutely right. We want certainty. And what Christianity, I think, gives us is a level of certainty about our relationship with God and about our ultimate direction. But I don't think it gives us much certainty about life here on earth,
no,
except that Christ will be with us. You
yes.
know, and that's where we're going.
That's
with
probably
it.
Enough. Yeah.
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 So that leads us on to your theme, I think.
Oh, yeah, which is fear. Well, we had this lovely bit of feedback in from Mark. Well, I found it lovely because it was just encouraging. Very short. He says, "Hi, Joe. Listening to you talk about fear really resonated with me. I have found as I approach 60, I've become more fearful of money and housing. And as I've become a grandparent, I've become more fearful of the world I've helped create. Enjoy your break. You need it." And that's some cheese from Mark. I appreciated that because, you know, sometimes you just want to know you're not the only one.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, I do feel a bit like an abject failure as a disciple because I just think, you know, the direction of life ought to be towards becoming a lot less fearful, more trusting, more, you know, light and free and all the rest of it. And in this particular area of my life, I do think I've got, the anxiety has seemed to get worse, certainly over the last year for me. So thank you for writing that in, Mark. I was deeply encouraged. And then we had this in from Rebecca.
And she says, "Hi, Joe. I was really touched by your honesty and openness in talking about the fear you experience and how fear not is your theme for the year." She says, "I don't have a solution for you, but as someone who has struggled with anxiety and depression for decades, I would like to share two insights given to me by a counsellor that really stuck and helped. But I also have a pondering. What exactly did Jesus mean when he said fear not? Fear is an emotion. In general, we can't actually prevent or control our initial experience of emotions. They just happen in response to a stimulus. So how is it possible to stop ourselves feeling fear or anxiety? I suspect what Jesus meant was what you are fearing is not actually a threat to you."
Mm.
So he wasn't giving a command to not feel the emotion of fear, but a reassurance that we can't let the fear dissipate because it's based on a false threat. Fear and anxiety are caused by release of fight or flight hormones, and there are ways to stop the release of those hormones. Mindfulness or mindful activity, like Nick suggested, does exactly that. There are also various ways to thought stop, which can break the cycle and help you to assess whether the threat is real or proportional to the fear. I remember two particularly helpful responses given me by a counsellor, which somehow stuck. One, when the fear or anxiety starts, try to look at the feeling as if it was separate from you. Maybe imagine looking at it as an actor on a stage, as if you were sitting in the stalls, and be curious about watching it. What is it trying to achieve? What is it telling you? Is it speaking truth, trying to protect you, or is it misleading you somehow? As a believer, that also is a good moment to ask the divine to help you see it as she does. This can also throw light on whether that fear is actually the root cause of the response or whether there is something else underlying it that causes the fear to be triggered. So that's good stuff. Thank you for that. Mm. And then two, I once felt that life events were taking such a bad turn that I described my fear of what might happen as driving a car full pelt towards a cliff, praying there would be a bridge over it, but unable to see one. I was afraid I would crash into the ravine below. The counsellor listened so empathetically and said, "That sounds terrifying, but actually, if the bridge isn't there and your fear is realised, you will simply find you're in a car at the bottom of the ravine, still driving, still on life's journey, but with a different route. The car metaphor is not quite true. There won't actually be a crash and it won't actually kill you, even if it makes life difficult for a time." And she said, "That was quite a revelation to realise that my story would just be different than I had expected and hoped, but it would still be my story and I could still experience the love of family, friends and the divine. Last thought. If fear becomes too hard to manage, getting help is good. I have had batches of counselling 3 times in the past 20 years and have found them so very helpful each time, building on the last. I also take an antidepressant, and while they don't cure the problem completely, they do make it feel less excruciating so I can manage. Modern life is complex to navigate. There's no shame in feeling it's too hard sometimes. I hope these mullings help you. If not helpful for your situation, I look forward to hearing about what does work for you. Right, Brie and Soft Goat, Rebecca."
Yay.
Thank you, Rebecca. That's so helpful and lovely to be reminded of those things. And I, too, have been in and out of therapy probably all my adult life now I think about it from time to time. And you're absolutely right. Seek help. What do you gain by not asking for help? I don't get it. And if you need medication, take medication. No one thinks twice about taking paracetamol if they got a headache, do they? So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a really helpful email. And,
yes.
And, you know, it speaks straight into what you were saying beforehand about feeling maybe I should be beyond this.
Yeah.
You know, because there is no shame and you can't control it. For me, I think the hardest times are like lying awake at night.
Mm.
And when I absolutely, and this has happened to me over the past maybe year or so, I feel the anxiety in a visceral way.
Mm.
You know, I feel it like the adrenaline pumps.
Yes, yeah, me too.
And it's about things that really aren't that important, but I can't stop that reaction. So I think she's exactly right that it's about how we deal with that reaction. I just want to pick up on one thing quickly before I talk to you about it, is the ending, ripe brie and soft goat.
Mm.
I'm hoping the goat is goat's cheese.
Yes.
And not just a generally
just
sort of...
Just a limp goat.
Just a squidgy goat that you happen to encounter. But what a great email.
Yeah.
So let me ask you about how things have gone with Fear Not.
Well, I mean, of course they've gone well because I haven't been in this place where I work and live and everything, and I've been on holiday doing nothing. So I didn't find myself worrying about that at all, being anxious. So holiday was
it was very timely to announce our themes and then to have this 3 weeks to sort of go away and think about that and to have the space to think about how am I really going to be? How do I want to be? Start setting some intentions. And I've got to tell you a couple of things that have been really helpful. First is the book by Oliver Berkman, Meditations for Mortals.
That's great, isn't it?
Well, what a book. I'd love to get him on. And that actually, I went away with a pile of books, as I do on a long holiday, and that's the only one I read. As you know, I was struggling with reading over the last year. I thought I was going to just get it all back, but I found that going slowly through that and rereading it was what I needed to do. So that was great. And then, I mean, our listeners really are the best in the world. They have to be, because here's my theme, Fear Not. And of course, a listener has written a book called, and I quote, How Not to Worry. And the lovely Paul McGee, sumo man for the rest of us, what a beautiful man he is. And he sent me a copy of the book. I have not read it yet, but I intend to read it. And then I intend to interview him about it and ask him. So anyone who is a bit fearful, you know, we will get the best possible tips we can on how to do it. So that's
great. We did talk to Paul before, by the way, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
We've got I'll put a link to the previous interview.
He's a fascinating man. And of course, he has exceptional taste in shirts, as you would expect.
Indeed.
More generally, I think one of the things that happened while I was away was, again, we've talked about it before, but just this determination not to worry about things in the world that I can't control. There was a terrible earthquake, you know, while I was away. I heard about it. I read about it. You thought, right, OK, what can I do? OK, there's the Disaster Emergency Committee or other charities. So there's something I can do. But then I have to let go. And it doesn't do me any good to watch the intolerable suffering of all those survivors. It's not that I don't care. It's just that I feel I can't cope with too much overload of bad news. I think I understand there's been some tariffs done. And I don't doubt that what the news is doing now is talking about all the potential impacts. It could mean this, it could mean that. And people are going to do this and people are going to do that. And I just think, I can't control that. I don't, you know, I might get a glimpse of what it means, but I'm not going to spend time. I'm not addicted to the news app. I'm parking it. Sometimes I'm tempted to take it off. And, you know, on Facebook, I don't read anything that's political commentary. I like pictures of bunnies and stuff.
Soft bunnies or
no, fully boned bunnies, I think.
As it were, yeah.
And goats. And, you know, I like pictures of people and, you know, I'm interested in what they're doing. I'm not interested in their political views. So what a holiday does, it gives you the chance to sort of set the direction, be intentional. Let's make sure I stick to those things and not find myself creeping back to, you know, checking the news app 5 or 6 times a day. Don't need to. The news will be there. So those are things, doing the things I can control. Money and work and health present a bit more of a challenge. Not worrying about those things, not getting anxious about those things. And I guess I'm a little bit more hazy about, you know, things that I sort of have some control over, but not complete control over.
Yes.
And money and work and health fall into those kind of categories. So stay tuned for that. But I'm happy, very happy with the progress over the last 4 weeks.
That's great.
Now the rubber hits the road.
Yes, and I think Rebecca's email is so prescient and important, because these are things that are going to hit you whether you like it or not. You know, in other words, you're not going to be able to avoid that fear. That is going to come because it's built in.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one of the things you've been struggling with. And what I've tried to learn over the past few years, really, is it's about the response to that fear and not trying to avoid having it. Because, only time, I think, will take it out of the equation and changing of circumstances.
Yeah,
I think it's about how do you respond to that. One thing that's really helped me was I read a book about regret. I think I talked about it on the podcast, actually. about the life-changing power of regret. And it's about all, it started with all those people who've got Je ne regrette rien tattoos and have regretted that decision, basically. And one of the things in that, and in another book on resilience that I read, was about telling yourself a really good story. So what's the best story? What's the best outcome that could happen here? And so recent events to do with the house and things like that, when I've been lying awake at night, I've been trying to tell myself a good story. What's the good story? What's the best thing that could happen here? What can I learn out of this? How can things improve out of this? So maybe when you, as you come back in, and you're going to be anxious about picking up work again, because the nature of your work is it doesn't wait for you, does it?
No, exactly.
You can't pick it up immediately when you come back. But maybe using past experiences, what's the best story you can tell yourself at the moment about the next few weeks?
What does that look like?
That's
really helpful. That's great. I'm going to try and do that. Thank you. Superb.
You're still worried about it. I'll just tell you that now.
Come on.
But at least you'll have some options. Anyway, we should wrap up. How good to be back talking with you.
Yes.
And I mean that without any sarcasm.
No, you really do. And me too. You know, we are so thrilled to be back with you, all 17 of you. Bless you. Thank you for your wonderful emails. Love to hear what your themes are, or any comments on our themes. And, you know, feel free to steal our themes if you can't think of your own, I suppose. But I'm sure you can think of your own and write in and let us know. joe@midfaithcrisis.org.
Oh, yes. Never fear to steal stuff from this podcast. No. Where do you think we got it from in the first place?
Exactly.
Yeah, stole it from other people. Anyway, thank you very much for listening as ever. Thank you to people who recommend the podcast to others. It's always lovely to hear that's happened. Thank you to people who support the podcast financially. That's really helpful.
Oh, that's so good.
And it enables Joe to go to these places and send me irritating photos. So that's helpful.
There is some truth in that.
Yeah, so thanks for that. And so if you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by going to our website. And I think in the future, we're going to look in for different options as well. We'll try and get that sorted to help people support. But in the meantime, we'll be back with you next week. And Joe, would you like to end with a little thought or blessing or inappropriate gesture?
I've not got much, but I do want to say to everyone, may strength and hope be always near, and may you know peace as the noise of the world grows loud, and may love hold you steady through it all. Thank you.